you're a cold grease, Rawra said.
Leia blinked at the odd non-sequitur, but even as she opened her mouth to ask what he was talking about, she spotted the double wedge of birds flying swiftly through the sky beneath them. Those birds? She asked.
Yes, once they were a prize food to the Wookiee people. Now even the poor may eat them.
He pointed toward the edge of the village above them, to the haze of light coming from the searchlights she'd seen during their approach.
Crowies will come to those lights, he explained. Hunters there await them.
Leia nodded, understanding. She'd seen visual lures of varying degrees of sophistication used to attract food animals on other worlds. Don't all those clouds interfere with their effectiveness, though?
Through the clouds they work best, Rawra said. The clouds spread the light. A Crowy will see it from great distances and come.
As he spoke, the double wedge of birds banked sharply, climbing toward the clouds overhead and the lights playing against them.
Even so, you see, tonight we shall perhaps dine on one of them.
I'd like that, she said. I remember Chewie saying once they were delicious.
Then we must return to the village, Rawra said, touching the lift car's control.
With a creak of the cable, it started upward.
We had hoped to shelter you in one of the more luxurious homes,
he commented as they started upward.
But Chewbacca would not allow it.
He gestured, and for the first time Leia noticed the homes built directly into the tree beside them. Some of them were multi-storied and quite elaborate. All of them seemed to open up directly onto empty space.
Chewbacca understands my preferences, she told Rawra, suppressing a shiver. I was wondering why the lift car went this far down past the village proper.
The lift car is used mainly for cargo transportation or the ill,
Rawra said.
Most Wookiees prefer to climb the trees naturally.
He held out a hand to her, palm up, and as the muscles under the skin and fur flexed, a set of wickedly curved claws slid into sight from hidden fingertip sheaths. Leia swallowed hard.
I didn't realize Wookiees had claws like those, she said. Though I suppose I should have. You are arboreal, after all.
To live among trees without them would be impossible,
Rawra agreed. The claws retracted again, and the Wookiee waved the hand upward.
Even vine travel would be difficult without them.
Vines?
Leia echoed, frowning up through the lift car's transparent roof. She hadn't noticed any vines on the trees earlier, and didn't really see any now. Her eyes fell on the cable running from the lift car up into the leaves and branches above. The dark green cable.
That cable?
She asked carefully, nodding toward it.
That's a vine?
It's a Kashyyyk vine, is,
he assured her.
Do not worry about its strength. It is stronger than composite cable material and cannot even by blasters be cut. Two, it is self-repairing.
I see,
Leia said, staring at the vine and fighting hard against the sudden sense of panic. She'd flown all around the galaxy in hundreds of different types of airspeeders and spaceships without the slightest twinge of acrophobia. But this hanging out on the edge of nowhere without a solid powered cockpit around her was something else entirely. The warm sense of security she'd been feeling at being on Kashyyyk was starting to evaporate.
Have the vines ever broken?
She asked, trying to sound casual.
In the past, it sometimes happened, Rawra said. Various parasites and fungi, if unchecked, can erode them. Now we employ safeguards which our ancestors did not have. Lift cars such as this one contain emergency repulsor lift systems.
Ah, Leia said, the momentary discomfort easing as she once again found herself feeling like a raw and not very bright diplomatic beginner. It was easy to forget that despite their somewhat quaint-looking arboreal villages and their own animalistic appearance, Wookiees generally were quite at home with high technology. The lift car rose above the level of the village floor. Chewbacca and Salporin were standing there waiting for them, the former fingering his bowcaster and giving the little twitches that Leia had learned to associate with impatience. Rawra brought them to a stop at the level of the wide exit ramp and opened the door, Salporin stepping forward as he did so to offer Leia his hand in assistance.
We've made arrangements for you and Chewbacca to stay at Salporin's home,
Rawra said as they stepped out onto relatively solid ground again.
It's not far. There are transports available if you wish.
Leia looked out across the nearest parts of the village. She wanted very much to walk, to get out among the people and start getting the feel of the place. But after all the effort they'd put into sneaking her onto Kashyyyk in the first place, parading herself in front of the whole population would probably not be the smartest thing to do. A transport would probably be best, she told Rawra. Chewbacca growled something as they came up to him.
She wished to see the village's structure,
Rawra told him.
We are now ready to go.
Chewbacca gave another growl of displeasure, but returned his bowcaster to his shoulder and strode off without further comment toward a repulsor sled parked at the side of the road, perhaps 20 meters away. Rawra and Leia followed, with Salporin bringing up the rear. The houses and other buildings began right at the edge of the matted branches, Leia had already noted, without anything more substantial than a few twisted Kashyyyk vines between them and empty space. Rawra had implied that the homes clinging to the trees themselves were the more prestigious ones. Perhaps those here at the edge belonged to the upper middle class. Idly, she looked at the nearest of them, glancing into the windows as they passed. A face moved into view in the shadows behind one of them, catching her eye. Chewie! She gasped. Even as her hand darted for her blaster, the face vanished. There was no mistaking those bulging eyes and protruding jaw and steel-gray skin. Chewbacca was at her side in an instant, bowcaster in hand. One of those creatures who attacked us on Bimisari is in there, she told him, reaching out with all the Jedi sense she could muster. Nothing. At that window, she added, pointing with her blaster. He was right there. Chewbacca barked an order, sliding his massive bulk between Leia and the house and easing her slowly backwards, his bowcaster weaving back and forth across the structure in a covering pattern. Rawra and Salporin were already at the house, each carrying a pair of wicked-looking knives they'd pulled from somewhere. They took up flanking positions beside the front door, and with a brilliant flash from his bowcaster, Chewbacca shot the door in. From somewhere in toward the center of the village, someone roared, a long, ululating Wookiee howl of anger or alarm that seemed to echo from the buildings and massive trees. Even before Rawra and Salporin had disappeared into the house, the howl was being taken up by other voices, rising in number and volume until it seemed as if half the village had joined in. Leia found herself pressing against Chewbacca's hairy back, wincing at the sheer ferocity in that call, and flashing back to the Bimisari marketplace reacting to her jewelry theft. Except that these weren't funny little yellow-clad Bims. They were giant, violently strong Wookiees. A large crowd had begun to form by the time Rawra and Salporin emerged from the house, a crowd that Chewbacca paid no more attention to than he had the howling as he kept his eyes and bowcaster trained on the house. The other two Wookiees also ignored the crowd, disappearing around opposite sides of the house. They reappeared seconds later, their manner that of hunters who'd come up dry.
He was there, Leia insisted as they returned to where she and Chewbacca stood. I saw him.
That may be true,
Rawra said, slipping his knives back into the hidden sheaths behind his baldric. Salporin, his attention still back on the house, kept his own knives ready.
But we found no trace of anyone.
lay a bit at her lip, eyes flicking across the area. There were no other houses near enough for the alien to have crossed to without her and Chewbacca seeing him. No cover of any sort, for that matter, on this side of the house. On the other side, there was nothing but the edge of the village.
"He went over the edge," she realized suddenly. "He must have. Either worked his way under the village with climbing gear, or else met a craft hovering down below."
That is unlikely, Walrus said, starting past her. Not possible. I will go down the lift car to try and discover him.
Chewbacca reached a hand out to stop him, growling a negative.
You are right,
Rawra conceded, though clearly reluctantly.
Your safety, Leia Organa Solo, is the most important thing at this point. We will take you to safety first, and then make inquiries about this alien.
To safety?
Leia gazed at the house, a shiver running up her back, and wondered if there would ever again be such a thing for her as safety.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, the 20th Anniversary Edition, by Timothy Zahn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Chapter 18. The trilling code, coming from somewhere far behind him, startled Luke out of his dreamless sleep.
Okay, R2. I'm awake, he said groggily, reaching up to rub at his eyes.
His knuckles bumped into the visor of his flight helmet, and the impact did a bit to dissipate the fog still swirling through his mind. He couldn't remember exactly the circumstances under which he'd gone into hibernation, but he had the distinct feeling that R2 had brought him out too soon.
Is anything wrong?
He asked, trying to track down exactly what it was the droid was supposed to be doing. The trilling changed to an anxious-sounding warble. Still fighting to get his eyes properly focused, Luke searched out the computer scope for the translation. To his mild surprise, it was dark, as were all the rest of his instruments. And then it came back to him. He was trapped in deep space, with all the X-Wing systems shut down except power for R2 and minimal life support for himself. And R2 was supposed to be winding a new subspace radio antenna. Twisting a slightly stiff neck, he turned halfway around to look back at the droid, wondering what the problem was, and felt his muscles twitch with surprise. There, bearing rapidly down on them, was another ship. He spun back around, fully awake now, hands jabbing for the bank of power switches and slapping them all on. But it was so much useless reflex. Even with shortcuts, it would still take nearly 15 minutes to bring the X-Wing's engines from a cold start to any serious possibility of flight, let alone combat, if the intruder was unfriendly. Using the emergency maneuvering jets, he got the X-Wing turning slowly around to face the approaching ship. The scopes and sensors were starting to come back online again, confirming what his eyes had already told him. His visitor was a mid-sized, slightly dilapidated-looking Corellian bulk freighter. Not the sort of ship the Imperials usually used, and there were certainly no Imperial markings on its hull. But under the circumstances, it was just as unlikely that it was an innocent freight handler either. A pirate, perhaps? Luke reached out with the Force, trying to get a sense of the crew. R2 warbled, and Luke glanced down at the computer scope.
Yes, I noticed that too, Luke told him.
But a normal bulk freighter might be able to pull that kind of deceleration if it was empty. Why don't you do a quick analysis of the sensor readings? See if you can spot any weapons emplacements. The droid beeped in acknowledgement, and Luke gave the other instruments a quick scan. The primary laser cannon capacitors were at half charge now, with the main sublight drive about halfway through its pre-flight sequence. Then the flashing radio signal indicated that he was being hailed. Bracing himself, Luke flipped on the receiver.
Need assistance,
a cool female voice said.
Repeating, unidentified starfighter, this is the freighter Wildcard. Do you need assistance?
Wildcard, this is New Republic X-Wing AA-589,
Luke identified himself.
As a matter of fact, yes, I could use some help.
Acknowledged, X-Wing. What seems to be the problem?
Hyperdrive, Luke told her, watching the ship closely as it continued its approach.
A minute earlier, he'd rotated to the face of the freighter's approach. The other pilot had responded with a slight sidling drift of her own, with the result that the wild card was no longer in line with the X-Wing's lasers. Probably just being cautious, but there were other possibilities.
I've lost both motivators, he continued. Cracked shield cases, probably some other problems too. I don't suppose you'd be carrying any spares.
Not for a ship that size.
There was a short pause.
I'm instructed to tell you that if you care to come aboard, we can offer you passage to our destination system.
Luke reached out with the Force, trying to measure the sense behind the words. But if there was deceit there, he couldn't detect it. And even if there was, he had precious little choice.
Sounds good, he said. Any chance you could take my ship, too?
I doubt you could afford our shipping rates,
the other told him dryly.
I'll check with the captain, but don't get your hopes up. We'd have to take it in tow anyway. Our holds are pretty full at the moment.
Luke felt his lip twitch. A fully loaded bulk freighter couldn't possibly have managed the deceleration profile R2 had noted earlier. Either they were lying about that, or else that normal-looking drive system had undergone a complete and massive upgrading, which made the wild card either a smuggler, a pirate, or a disguised warship. And the New Republic had no disguised warships. The other pilot was talking again.
If you'll hold your present position, X-Wing, we'll move up close enough to throw a four-cylinder out to you. Unless you'd rather suit up and spacewalk across.
The cylinder sounds fastest, Luke said, deciding to try a light verbal probe.
I don't suppose either of us has any reason to hang around this place. How did you happen to wind up out here anyway?
We can handle a limited amount of baggage,
the other went on, ignoring the question.
I imagine you'll want to bring your astromech droid along, too.
So much for the light verbal probe.
Yes, I will, he told her.
All right, then. Stand by. Incidentally, the captain says the transport fee will be 5,000.
Understood,
Luke said, unstrapping his restraints. Opening the side pouches, he pulled out his gloves and helmet seal and folded them into his flight suit's chest pockets, where he'd have quick access to them. A four-cylinder was relatively foolproof, but accidents could always happen. Besides which, if the wild card's crew was hoping to pick themselves up a free X-Wing, shutting the cylinder down halfway through the operation would be the simplest and least messy way to dispose of him.
The crew.
Luke paused, straining his senses toward the ship moving steadily toward him. There was something wrong there. Something he could feel, but couldn't quite track down.
R2 warbled anxiously.
No, she didn't answer the question, Luke agreed. But I can't think of any legitimate reason for them to be out this far. Can you? The droid gave a soft electronic moan.
Agreed,
Luke nodded.
But refusing the offer doesn't buy us anything at all. We'll just have to stay alert.
Reaching into the other side pouch, he pulled out his blaster, checked its power level, and slid it into the holster pocket built into his flight suit. His comlink went into another pocket, though what use it would be aboard the wild card he couldn't imagine. The emergency survival pack went around his waist, awkward to fasten in the cramped quarters. And last, he pulled out his lightsaber and fastened it to his belt.
Okay, X-Wing, we've got the cylinder established,
the voice came.
Whenever you're ready.
The wild card's small docking bay was directly above him, its outer door gaping invitingly.
Luke checked his instruments,
confirmed there was indeed a corridor of air between the two ships, and took a deep breath.
Here we go, R2,
he said, and popped the canister. A puff of breeze brushed across his face as the air pressures equalized. Giving himself a careful push, he eased up and out, gripping the edge of the canopy to turn himself around. R2, he saw, had ejected from his socket and was drifting freely just above the X-Wing, making distinctly unhappy noises about his situation.
"I've got you, R2," Luke soothed, reaching out with the Force to pull the droid toward him.
Getting his bearings one last time, he bent his knees and pushed off. He reached the airlock at the back of the bay a half second ahead of R2, grabbed hold of the straps fastened to the walls, and brought both of them to a smooth halt. Someone was obviously watching. They were still moving when the outer lock door slid shut. Gravity came back, slowly enough for him to adjust his stance to it, and a moment later the inner door slid open. There was a young man waiting for them, wearing a casual coverall of an unfamiliar cut.
"Welcome aboard the Wild Card," he said, nodding gravely. "If you follow me, the captain would like to see you."
Without waiting for a reply, he turned and headed down the curving corridor.
"Come on, R2," Luke murmured, starting after him and reaching out with the Force for a quick survey of the ship.
Aside from their guide, he could sense only four others aboard, all of them in the forward sections. Behind him, in the aft sections, he shook his head, trying to clear it. It didn't help. The aft sections of the ship still remained oddly dark to him. An after effect of the long hibernation, probably. It was for certain, though, that there were no crew members or droids back there, and that was all he needed to know for the moment. The guide led them to a door, which slid open as he stepped to one side.
"Captain Card will see you now," he said, waving toward the open door.
"Thank you," Luke nodded to him.
With R2 bumping against his heels, he stepped into the room. It was an office of sorts, small, with much of its wall space taken up with what looked like highly sophisticated communications and encrypt equipment. In the center was a large desk-slash-console combination, and seated behind it, watching Luke's approach, was a slender man, thin-faced, with short dark hair and pale blue eyes.
"Good evening," he said in a cool, carefully modulated voice. "I'm Talon Card."
His eyes flicked up and down Luke, as if measuring him.
"And you, I presume, are Commander Luke Skywalker."
Luke stared at him. "How in the worlds?"
"Private Citizen Skywalker," he said, striving to keep his own voice calm. "I resigned my Alliance Commission nearly 4 years ago."
An almost smile twitched the corners of Card's mouth.
"I stand corrected. I must say, you've certainly found a good place to get away from it all."
The question was unstated, but no less obvious for that.
"I had some help choosing it," Luke told him. "A small run-in with an Imperial Star Destroyer about half a light year away."
"Ah," Card said, without any surprise that Luke could see or sense.
"Yes, the Empire is still quite active in this part of the galaxy. Growing more so, too, particularly of late."
He cocked his head slightly to the side, his eyes never leaving Luke's face.
"Though I presume you've already noticed that. Incidentally, it looks like we'll be able to take your ship in tow after all. I'm having the cables rigged now."
"Thank you," Luke said, feeling the skin on the back of his neck start to tingle. Whether a pirate or a smuggler, Card should certainly have reacted more strongly to the news that there was a Star Destroyer in the area. Unless, of course, he already had an understanding with the Imperials.
"Allow me to thank you for the rescue as well," he continued. "R2 and I are lucky you happened along." "And R2 is... oh, of course, your astromech droid."
The blue eyes flicked down briefly.
"You must be a formidable warrior indeed, Skywalker. Escaping from an Imperial Star Destroyer is no mean trick. Though, I imagine a man like yourself is accustomed to giving the Imperials trouble."
"I don't see much frontline action anymore," Luke told him.
"You haven't told me how you came to be out here, Captain. Or, for that matter, how you knew who I was."
Another almost smile.
"With a lightsaber attached to your belt?"
he asked wryly.
"Come now. You are either Luke Skywalker, Jedi, or else someone with a taste for antiques, and an insufferably high opinion of his swordsmanship. Again, the blue eyes flicked up and down Luke. You're not really what I expected, somehow. Though I suppose that's not all that surprising. The vast majority of Jedi lore has been so twisted by myth and ignorance that to get a clear picture is almost impossible.
The warning bell in the back of Luke's mind began to ring louder.
You almost sound as if you were expecting to find me here, he said, easing his body into a combat stance and letting his senses reach out. All five of the crewers were still more or less where they'd been a few minutes earlier, farther up toward the forward part of the ship. None except Card himself was close enough to pose any kind of immediate threat.
As a matter of fact, we were,
Card agreed calmly.
Though I can't actually take any of the credit for that. It was one of my associates, Mara Jade, who led us here.
His head inclined slightly to his right.
She's on the bridge at the moment.
He paused, obviously waiting.
It could be a setup, Luke knew.
But the suggestion that someone might actually have been able to sense his presence from light years away was too intriguing to pass up. Keeping his overall awareness clear, Luke narrowed a portion of his mind to the wild card's bridge. At the helm was the young woman he'd spoken to earlier from the X-Wing. Beside her, an older man was busy running a calculation through the nav computer. And sitting behind them, the jolt of that mind shot through him like an electric current.
Yes, that's her,
Card confirmed, almost offhandedly.
She hides it quite well, actually. Though not, I suppose, from a Jedi. It took me several months of careful observation to establish that it was you, and you personally, for whom she had these feelings.
It took Luke another second to find his voice. Never before, not even from the Emperor, had he ever felt such a black and bitter hatred.
I've never met her before, he managed.
No?
Card shrugged.
A pity. I was rather hoping you'd be able to tell me why she feels this way.
Oh, well.
He got to his feet.
I suppose, then, there's nothing more for us to talk about for the moment. And let me say in advance that I'm very sorry it has to be this way.
Reflexively, Luke's hand darted for his lightsaber. He'd barely begun the movement when the shock of a stun weapon coursed through him from behind. There were Jedi methods for fighting off unconsciousness, but they all took at least a split second of preparation, a split second that Luke did not have.
Dimly, he felt himself falling, heard R2's frantic trilling in the distance, and wondered, with his last conscious thought, how in the world's Card had done this to him.
Chapter 19.
He awoke slowly, in stages, aware of nothing but the twin facts that, one, he was lying flat on his back, and two, he felt terrible. Slowly, gradually, the haze began to coalesce into more localized sensations. The air around him was warm but damp, a light and shifting breeze carrying several unfamiliar odors along with it. The surface beneath him had the soft, firm feel of a bed. The general sense of his skin and mouth implied he'd been asleep for probably several days. It took another minute for the implications of that to percolate through the mental fog filling his brain. More than an hour or two was well beyond the safe capabilities of any stun weapon he'd ever heard of. Clearly, after being shot, he'd been drugged. Inwardly, he smiled. Card was probably expecting him to be incapacitated for a while longer, and Card was in for a surprise. Forcing his mind into focus, he ran through the Jedi technique for detoxifying poisons and then waited for the haze to clear. It took him some time to realize that nothing was, in fact, happening. Somewhere in there, he fell asleep again, and when he next awoke, his mind had cleared completely. Blinking against the sunlight streaming across his face, he opened his eyes and lifted his head. He was lying on a bed, still in his flight suit, in a small but comfortably furnished room. Directly across from him was an open window, the source of the aroma-laden breezes he'd already noted. through the window, too, he could see the edge of a forest 50 meters or so away, above which a yellowish-orange sun hovered, rising or setting, he didn't know which. The furnishings of the room itself didn't look much like those of a prison cell.
"Finally awake, are you?"
a woman's voice said from the side. Startled, Luke twisted his head toward the voice. His first instantaneous thought was that he had somehow missed sensing whoever was over there. His second, following on the heels of the first,